This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything that your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts you won't find anywhere else, to small batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
At least 18 confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus, including 16 residents and 2 staff, have been linked to a second senior care facility in Canby, Marquee at Hope Village. The 16 residents who have tested positive so far represent almost nearly half of the current population of 39 at the post-acute rehab facility. This is independently owned by Marquee Companies and located on the campus of the Hope Village Senior Living Community. Marquee Companies spokeswoman Heather Villanueva said all residents who have tested positive at this time are showing mild to no symptoms. Quote, our nursing and medical provider teams are focused on assessing and intervening to support and care for any residents with symptoms or discomfort, end quote. Results are still pending for both residents and staff members, all of whom will be tested for the coronavirus in an effort to quickly identify any more asymptomatic carriers. We are preparing ourselves for possible additional positive cases and will provide an update when we know more, Villanueva said in an email Saturday. We are doing everything we can to care for our residents and ensure we stop the spread of this within our facility. The facility has aggressively implemented isolation protocols in accordance with the recommendations of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This also has the same staff members caring for residents with confirmed or suspected cases to help mitigate the spread. Staff members who have tested positive have been directed to self-isolate for a minimum of 14 days as required. Staff and family members were informed of the outbreak immediately, according to Villanueva. For Kathy Severison de la Plaine, whose 73-year-old mother has been a resident there since March 2019, it was the news she and her sisters have been dreading since the pandemic began. We knew it may be inevitable for it to happen at Hope Village, she admitted. You just hope each day that goes by that you don't receive the news that we've received in the last 48 hours. Their mother is in decent health, she said, but has asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, both of which are increased risk factors for COVID-19. It's scary, but I'm confident that the staff at Marquee Hope Village are working hard to face this challenge, she said. My heart goes out to the staff, residents, and families of those who have tested positive. Marquee Hope Village Post-Acute Rehab is a 50-bed facility providing both long-term and short-term rehabilitative care for those with chronic medical conditions, including physical, occupational, and speech therapy. It is located in the same building as the Marquee Assisted Living Facility, whose staff and residents are also being tested. The outbreak is the second to be reported in a Canby long-term care facility and the largest to date. Though anyone can be sickened by COVID-19, those who are older and have underlying medical conditions are at much greater risk for serious complications or death. Of the 161 deaths the state has linked to COVID-19 as of Sunday, only 11 have been younger than 60. The The mayor of Oregon City is under fire for his recent comments about police killings and systemic racism, as well as the protests sparked by the death of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died in police custody. Not to nitpick, but there were actually 10 unarmed black people killed by police nationally, Mayor Holliday said, according to a screenshot of the since-deleted comment on the community networking app Nextdoor. Of those 10, Holliday said, 6 were actively attacking officers. In the other 4, officers are either under indictment or standing trial. That's 10 out of maybe 60 million blacks in the country. That is hardly an epidemic, Holliday said. The screenshot of the June 4th comment drew greater attention Friday when an administrator posted it to the 28,000-member Facebook group Oregon City Chit Chat for discussion. That certainly happened. Over 900 comments as of Sunday, many of them criticizing his comments as tone-deaf and insensitive. "You should step down," said one man. "I'm being 100% serious. There is no room for this mentality from a purported leader in any 21st century community anywhere in this country. Get out." "Honestly, he needs to be removed from office over this," said Van W. McQueen, who is not alone in calling for a recall. "This isn't about politics. This is about humans and morality." According to the admin of OC Chit Chat, Holliday initially said he would comment on the post and explain his source, but left the group instead. He also declined comment to the Can Be Now podcast, and when asked to let us know if he changes his mind, texted, "I won't." His source may have been the recent article in the Wall Street Journal by conservative commentator Heather McDonald, which cited FBI statistics showing 9 unarmed blacks had been shot and killed by police in 2019, compared to 19 unarmed whites. Or it may have been similar statements by conservative radio host Larry Elder, since he, like Elder, conflated fatal police shootings with the broader term police killings. Police shootings would not include deaths due to excessive force or brutality, such as those of Eric Garner, Freddie Gray, or for that matter, George Floyd, who died after a Minneapolis police officer pressed a knee against his neck for almost 9 minutes. The term unarmed has also been scrutinized, as suspects carrying airsoft guns, pocket knives, or even rocks may be considered armed for the purposes of these reports. Oregon City itself has been the site of several straight days of peaceful demonstrations protesting systemic racism and excessive force by police. OCPD Chief Jim Band spoke out at the June 3rd City Commission meeting. He vowed to resist complacency and continue to evolve practices to better serve our community, end quote. "This event and others drive me to make sure we at the police department do our very best," Chief Band said, referring to the murder of Floyd. "We are committed to continuing our work to keep our community safe and welcoming for black people and all people of color." A group of concerned residents plans to meet on Monday to discuss an organized effort to recall Mayor Holliday, members of that group told the CNP. They said they will appoint a chief petitioner and move forward from there. The Oregon City Commission also scheduled an emergency meeting for Sunday evening to clarify the city's position on the death of George Floyd and the nationwide demonstrations calling for the end of systemic racism. Canby's mayor also shared his thoughts on the slaying of George Floyd and the global unrest it has sparked in a city council meeting last week. He began by explaining how he had discussed the situation with his own kids at length and tried to make sense of it. He said he asked them what they thought the protests were trying to accomplish, and they said, quote, "to get people to listen."
I asked a question last night of my kids to get them to understand why the demonstrating and why the protesting. And the response was, well, to get people to listen. And I said, to listen to what? And that's the challenge where I know that I need to do a better job of trying to explain why and what it is that we need to be listening to and listening for. I don't know how many more decades we can go as a society and allow what is happening and has been happening to go on.
Hodson, who grew up in Southern California, reflected on the trials of the four police officers who faced criminal charges for excessive force after beating Rodney King, another unarmed black man. Their acquittals touched off the 1992 Los Angeles riots. I remember being able to look south and see the smoke billowing from the LA area, he said. It's hard to believe that we have not learned, not been able to get to a better place in the last 20 to 30 years. He also described a recent eye-opening conversation with Camby Police Chief Brett Smith. In this conversation, they discussed Floyd and the actions by the former Minneapolis police officers that apparently caused his death. A viral video shows one particular officer, Derek Chauvin, kneeling on Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes.
That is, the tactic that was used is a lethal force tactic. And that is not one that our police chief condones of our police officers to use. It is a last ditch method to restrain somebody towards a lethal force situation. That is not something that our chief, like I said, condones, and nor do they teach that for Camby PD.
Hodson joined 25 other Portland area mayors in signing a statement by the Metropolitan Mayors Consortium last week, standing, quote, united in their support of the peaceful protests which testify to the systemic and institutional racial violence that plagues our nation, end quote. There is a long road ahead, but the work must be engaged in expediently, and it starts with us at the local level, the letter read. As mayors, we must initiate the work with contrition, empathy, open minds, and love. The only member of the consortium to decline to endorse this statement was Mayor Dan Holliday of Oregon City. They carried signs and candles. They came alone and in small groups and with their families. They stood, they sat, they knelt for exactly 9 minutes. They held their fists in the air. They prayed. They mourned. This was the scene at Waite Park Thursday night as a group of approximately 200 gathered for a peaceful candlelight vigil in memory of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died at the hands of four former Minneapolis police officers 10 days ago, and other lives lost to senseless, racially motivated violence across the country.
When I ring a bell, mourn. Mourn for those that cannot jog through a neighborhood. For those that cannot bird watch or barbecue in a park just like this one in peace. And for the ones that cannot breathe. We mourn for our fellow human beings, for George Floyd, and those that cannot breathe.
Originally planned as a private vigil for perhaps 25 people, word of the event leaked on social media early Thursday morning, and the numbers of those who said they were attending quickly grew. Hepler said she hadn't planned to speak at all, but wanted to make sure the intentions of the event were clear. We're here to gather peacefully and apart for 20 minutes for a vigil, she said. I firmly believe you are here for all the right reasons, but gatherings like this unfortunately bring out agitators. Please be aware and ignore anyone provoking you. Your safety and our community's safety is our top priority. If there were any agitators, they were as quiet as the demonstrators themselves. There was no provocation, and unlike at many other rallies that have been held across the country and in many small and mid-sized towns in Oregon, there were no chants, no marches. Nothing but a community gathered to grieve and to stand in solidarity with the grieving.
Ask yourself, been my role in this? What actions or non-actions have I taken that have allowed this to continue? What are all my own biases that I hold? Listen to your heart and be honest with yourself. Those reflections about ourselves lead us to make change. Ask yourself, what is my call to action? Will I educate myself? Will I continue to show up? Will I stand alongside our Black brothers and sisters? Will I listen with an open heart to the voices that have been silenced? Because as a privileged white woman up here, my voice is not the one you should be listening to. We need to mourn. We need to hold life just as precious for those who have a skin color that is a different shade of our own. Because Black lives matter. For the last 9 minutes of this,
mourners were instructed to observe 6 feet of physical distancing and to wear face coverings if they had them. They were also told to pick up after themselves and leave the park cleaner than when we came. Canby police were aware of the event, but did not have a presence there. On Friday morning, a message was posted to the Canby Police Department's Facebook page, thanking those in attendance for remaining peaceful while standing up for what they believe in. "We are proud to have such wonderful people in our community," the post said. "We stand by you and we support you." For the first time in more than a month, Countryside Living is COVID-free. The licensed nursing home in downtown Canby, which serves only residents for Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, was the site of the city's first known outbreak of the novel coronavirus in a senior care facility. The virus ultimately spread to 13 people whose cases were linked to the facility, including 8 residents and 3 staff members. 2 residents died of complications. But as of last week, the last confirmed case has officially met the Oregon Health Authority and CDC's standards for recovery. And the facility is officially COVID-free, according to Countryside spokeswoman Michelle Quinn. "I can tell you," she said, "at our staff meetings Friday, there was an atmosphere of lightness and joy for the first time in a while. The owners were there as we honored the employees for all their dedication to our residents and hard work during the outbreak." Owners Eric and Kristen Berkey have been hands-on during the outbreak. Kristen Berkey, a great cook, according to Countryside staff, has been in the facility's kitchen most days, preparing meals. Employees say they have been eating very well, thanks to Kristen. Eric Berkey, who opened Countryside over 2 decades ago as the culmination of a childhood dream, has been providing direct care to residents for the first time in years, helping residents into and out of bed and giving baths. "I wasn't going to ask anybody to do anything I wasn't willing to do myself," he said last month in an interview with the CNP. "The staff here have been really amazing. We put that sign up that says heroes work here because we really believe that. We want all of Canby to know." Berkey's vision for Countryside grew out of his experiences visiting his neighbor and family members at nursing homes as a boy. He remembers them as dark, closed places that smelled bad, where residents would sometimes lie in bed all day alone because the facilities were understaffed. He wanted to build a good home for the elderly, a place where the staff are friendly and accessible, where the care model was centered around community activities and time spent outdoors at events, parks, gardens, and in the facility's spacious enclosed patio. Virtually none of that has been allowed since the pandemic started. "That has been one of the most difficult parts of all of this, how we've had to change almost everything we do," he said. The residents having to be isolated, not able to go outside, that's not countryside. That's not what we're about. Quinn said the staff is so grateful for the community's support during the outbreak. They continue to enforce all precautionary measures recommended by the state and public health officials to hopefully prevent another one. The virus still poses a serious threat to the vulnerable population they serve, even more so as the strictest coronavirus lockdown measures are relaxed across the state. It may seem cliche, but the feeling of a weight being lifted definitely describes the mood among staff and residents at Countryside Living now, said Quinn. We will continue to be cautious and follow guidelines to keep everyone safe. But we can do that now with a confidence inspired by facing those hard times and coming through them together.
All right, it's Police Beat for the week of April 21st through the 27th. And we're going to get things going real good on the 21st. You know, when quarantine is in effect and people are supposed to be in their homes, not going out. Well, we're going to have, at 1:28 a.m., an uninsured vehicle being driven by a suspended driver who got stopped. The officers seized methamphetamine from the vehicle, and they cited the driver. The passenger was also issued citations in lieu of arrest for multiple outstanding Douglas County felony warrants. On April 23rd at 8:35 a.m., response to an injury accident in a parking lot. Hopefully, it wasn't a parked vehicle, but you never know in Canby. At 1:05 p.m., response to a bicyclist. That's a fun word to say, suffering a medical event. That's not a fun thing to go through. At 2:56 p.m., response to a report of a theft from a store. And at 7:23 p.m., report of, well, there it is, a hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. Because we can't just leave those parked ones alone. On April 24th at 4:57 p.m., response to a report of a suspect attempting to steal items from a store. Officers located the suspect who had driven and parked his vehicle at the rear of a nearby closed restaurant, a good place to hang out after you've stolen things. Both the suspect and his driver were arrested on outstanding warrants. On April 25th at 12:25 a.m., response to a report of a person rummaging through a dumpster. Officers advised the suspect that she was trespassed and could not return to the location. The location being a dumpster. I feel like I learned that one when I was like six. My mom trespassed me from her dumpster, and I haven't gone back since. On April 26th at 12:10 a.m., a driver was arrested for DUI controlled substance. At 9:09 a.m., report of a dog being attacked by two other dogs. That is terrifying. At 4:34 p.m., report of a customer at a convenience store becoming angry at the cashier for not offering a refund for a food item. Man, that's fun. That's a fun thing for a cop to be called in on. Like, customer service issues. I'm sorry. That tickles me a little bit. That's fun. At 6:09, report of a person trespassing at a golf course and then displaying holstered knives in a threatening manner when he was asked to leave. That's less tickly for me than the customer service, but still, the image of a person just on a golf course, I don't know. That's kind of scary, though. People live around there. Don't go take knives to a golf course. On April 27th at 8:09 a.m., report of theft from an unlocked vehicle overnight, as well as at 10:32 a.m., report of a theft from an unlocked vehicle overnight. 12:58, response to a report of burglary in progress. Upon arrival, officers located a tent and other personal items near a building. But the building itself was found to be secure. No one broke in, and no items were actually missing. Officers later located and contacted the transient owner of the personal items. At 3:04 p.m., report of a stolen vehicle, which officers located the following day. And finally, at 6:20, to just finish out our day of burglary, we have a report of a burglary at a business. That is Police Beat. Stay safe out there, guys. Not just, you know, from parked vehicles and offensive littering and, you know, meth and heroin, but also, you know, viruses and stuff. Stay safe.
Canby, DirectLink is here for you. In these troubling times, the last thing anyone should have to worry about is how to stay connected to their loved ones, work, education, and news. The expert staff at DirectLink are all based right here in Canby and are committed to keeping those critical internet, video, and voice connections on and strong for their members. They have signed the Keep Americans Connected pledge from the FCC, which means they have promised to keep students online to continue their studies, local businesses connected to their customers and employees, and all their members virtually in touch with what matters most to them, no matter how far away they may be. So if you have DirectLink as a provider, go ahead and reach out to your loved ones on a traditional telephone, watch a child's home recital over an internet video chat, download your favorite local podcast, I mean, do we even have to ask what it is, or enjoy a favorite movie at home, because DirectLink will keep our friends, neighbors, and local businesses connected, no matter what. We're all in this together.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Canby Now Plus member Katie Roberts Hemphill. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
Joining us for the Canby Conversation today, once again on the Canby Now podcast, are Andy Geisler. He's the Supply Chain VP for Columbia Distributing. Hi, Andy.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, and also Lindsay Taylor, Communications Director for Columbia. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Tyler. Thanks for having us again.
Absolutely. So delighted to have you back on. So how are you guys doing? First of all, we kind of been asking the past few months, just sort of checking in with people in these crazy times. How are you holding up?
Yeah, it's been kind of tough. You know, we have a lot of our accounts, the on-premise accounts, which are beer, taverns, bars, restaurants, that have been hit pretty hard.
Absolutely.
We've had to make a lot of changes to our business just in how we go to market and adjust to that. And what's happened too, as you can imagine, is a lot of that volume shifted to grocery stores and Costco's and that. So the whole kind of delivery mix that we do has changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we've had also, you know, we have people in the stores, we have people in warehouses working in fairly, you know, somewhat close proximity, and we have drivers that are interacting with receiving clerks. And so we've had to change a lot of how they actually interact in those venues. Like the merchandisers in particular are out in the store and in the back rooms stocking product. It's one of the more challenging jobs in the company. And then they're interacting with customers at the account. And so a lot of different process change. And we've spent a lot of time trying to care for our employees, make sure that they have, you know, the best information and the best equipment that they need to stay safe, you know, remain safe and keep those around them safe as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. I really want to dig into a lot more of that, but let's start by, you know, if people are like, wait, what even is Columbia? I think most people are aware at this point, but obviously you guys are one of the largest beverage distributors in the country, have a really long history here in our state of Oregon, the largest, I believe, here on the West Coast. Lindsay or Andy, can you tell us just maybe a little bit more, give us a little bit of a brief overview of Columbia, your employees, maybe a little bit about what your company is all about.
We are about an 87-year-old company now that was started in Portland, Oregon. And we have grown to 14 branches throughout Oregon, Washington, and Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
We now have around 2,700 employees. And we are consolidating three of our warehouses that are in Portland to one that is going into your great city of Canby.
I heard something about that, I think.
Maybe you've even seen it too, that mall-sized structure.
Yes, yeah.
That we're building out there.
Yeah.
That we did build. It is almost done. So we distribute beer, wine, spirits, non-alcoholic products, health beverages, including kombucha, water, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We play a big part in the communities where we live and play. And one of our primary goals is to give back, which hopefully the town of Canby has seen a bit so far prior to us even entering there. I know we've really got to know you through some of the great things that you do there in Canby, including fireworks displays and street parties and some of the philanthropic efforts that you have there that we've been able to tie into.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You guys helped even just during the pandemic response. I know that there were some donations that were made of actual physical equipment, I believe, a cooler or a cooler truck, I think, that went toward the food relief efforts of the Canby Center. You were one of the main sponsors of last year's street dance, which sadly we won't have this year. But that was even just, you know, before you had even officially joined the Canby community back then. So yeah, you've definitely been making your presence felt, and that's been really appreciated.
Great. Yes, we hope to continue in whatever form or shape that needs to take now in this kind of new world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, we're going to talk a lot more about that big building, as you put it, here in Canby. But let's go back, Andy, to some of your comments. Obviously, the pandemic, the COVID-19 situation has affected so many businesses, so many aspects of our lives, probably at this point, pretty much nothing that it hasn't impacted. But you mentioned, obviously, with what you do, distributing beverages before all this largely to a large number of restaurants and bars, which, you know, bars were shut down, restaurants weren't able to do in-person service. So that was mostly beverages were not able to be served. You had to really change all of those supply chains, and that's kind of your job. Tell us a little bit about what that was like. And I mean, was it just completely not anything you had experienced before?
Nothing like I experienced before. I wasn't around 100 years ago in the last one. It was, you know, it's just a shock. You know, sometimes you don't even know what to do. We've had some really good leadership, you know, input on this and some very proactive efforts. But, you know, basically, you know, we've had this shift. And it's funny how it goes through the supply chain. Is, you know, it's all down, you know, bars, taverns, restaurants, they're the one who buys kegs, you know.
Right, right.
We have thousands of kegs in our warehouse that are going out of code. And, between us and the suppliers, we have to destroy it and lost some money on that, and then shift our product mix to things that are more of what's selling. Yeah. And then try to guess about, you know, when to bring the kegs back, you know, based on the phased approaches and having it in demand. So it's kind of funny, you know, we're actually running out of stock of some items that are big sellers, you know, large packs out of grocery stores and that kind of thing. So it's just, it goes all the way to the supply chain.
Right.
You know, in like cans have been shorted to suppliers because all that beer isn't going into kegs now, it's going into cans. And so there isn't even enough aluminum cans for some of the suppliers to can their products. So that kind of thing's happening throughout the supply chain. For us particularly, we've had to kind of guess where the volume's going. And as you probably heard, and it was consistent with us, is actually a lot of sales spike when it first came out, what we call pantry buying, some call it panic buying. I think when it's beer, it really should just be called pantry buying.
Right.
You know? But
I remember those days, yeah.
And then we actually thought, okay, once the pantries are full, it'll drop down, but it's actually kind of stayed up in those outlets. And so it's kind of balanced out the loss of the what we call on-premise outlets. Also, you know, bars, taverns, restaurants usually buy less in quantity, but relative to what they buy, need higher frequency deliveries because of the space in their stores. And so we've had to balance the loss of that with going to higher capacity outlets like a Fred Meyer or Safeway or Albertsons and that kind of thing. So then you think about how that affects balancing your truck loads and deliveries and how much goes on a truck and what trucks go where now that you're bypassing all these restaurants on your routes. So the routing's taken a lot of balance. We have a whole workforce that's focused on the sales side on on-premise. And so they were shifted to other activities to, you know, keep them employed within the company and keep and retain their skill sets,
For
when it returns.
Yeah, that's great.
All that shift, the workforce and resources and assets to, you know, make sure that we do a good job of maintaining a viable business ourselves and then execute in this environment. But also look forward and try and guess. We're really almost daily on calls trying to say, okay, what's the new news about phase recovery?
Yeah.
Those come out. And the thing about that too is when we get on calls, I mean, we're in every state in Oregon for the most part and Washington. And not every state, every county.
Right.
And those counties are coming out at different times. So even the branches that are dealing with one or more counties might be in a different phase within our company response.
Yeah.
So it's been just a huge challenge to try and keep track of it. And don't really fault the government entities because they're oftentimes acting with incomplete information.
Right.
Trying to do the best they can. So they're changing course, adjusting course every now and then, which causes us to have to adjust course and then compare it to what's Washington State doing or what's Snohomish County in Washington doing compared to King and, you know, or Marion County in Oregon, So it's kind of a challenge to do that.
Sure. Know? Oh yeah. That sounds like a crazy show. I didn't even think about some of that stuff. Like, you know, and when we originally kind of chatted about what we're going to talk about in this, I thought it would just be as simple as, kind of a little bit of what liquor stores saw, you know, that they're not supplying bars and stuff as much, but they're selling a lot of the same products just within their stores and to customers. I didn't think about like, oh, you know, obviously kegs aren't going to move now that that bars and restaurants are closed. It's a different kind of product. What do you mentioned that you had to destroy some kegs. How do you do that? And why didn't you just call me? Because I just had a birthday recently, and I feel like I could have helped with that.
Fred Meyer and pay for it.
did you try to do direct sales of some of those?
Well, actually what we did, to be honest with you, is we had some growler days for some of our employees. Where we were allowed to do it. I don't think we're allowed to do that in Washington, but here in Portland, we had Thursday, we'd get some kegs that were close to code, put them in the one of our draft trucks and just have employees kind of top off their growlers.
Ooh, waste not, want not.
But that's just a small, you know, it goes out of code, you know, so technically we're not allowed to, you know, do anything the way that when it's out of code.
Yeah.
And then what you have to do is, and we even extended to on-premise accounts that hadn't tapped the keg yet. Mm-hmm. We got permission from the states to take that back and credit them to lighten their financial burden a little bit.
That's so cool, yeah.
Some of the kegs we actually sent to distillers to turn it into hand sanitizer. So probably send you a bottle of that if you want to take a swig of that.
desperate.
And then the process to get, you know, kind of take care of that is, you know, we send the kegs to a decanter, a company that does decanting services, and they decant it, basically take the beer out and then pour it on the keg shells back to the suppliers, which is actually another logistical challenge because there are some generic kegs, like a MicroStar keg. So some small brewers will just use MicroStar so they don't have to have their own keg system. But then some of the larger suppliers have their own kegs. So you have to make sure the kegs go to the right suppliers and get accounted for and deposits are returned for them and that kind of thing. Another logistical challenge we've encountered. I have to say, you know, the team within our company has just done a great job with all of that stuff and worked long hours. I mean, really long hours. Like our routing director probably worked 7 straight weeks with, you know, not a full day off, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I want to add to that. Sure. We have learned a lot about one another in our jobs, where some of our jobs are not, they're no longer in service at the moment.
Right.
We've had to pivot, like many people are doing, and to stay busy and stay productive. And so some of us have helped out in areas where we haven't before. And so getting that kind of shoe on the other foot kind of thing, where you're experiencing others' lives and what they're going through. The company's learned a lot about each other and our jobs. And I think, this is one of those silver linings where we're getting a little more empathetic about what our day-to-day lives are and maybe how we can improve in some areas.
Sure, sure. Ultimate team building exercise.
Yeah. Right?
Like 3 month long. Well, in the midst of all of that, you guys are also building this huge building here in Canby, over 500,000 square feet, the largest building our city has ever seen. It's not even close. I think it's something like 2.5 times the size of the Canby Fred Meyer. Lindsay, you kind of described it as a mall-sized building. What goes into even just the sort of nuts and bolts aspect of a project that large?
Yeah, I'll jump in on this one. You know, I was just commenting to someone, it's funny how long the paperwork takes to how long it takes to build the building. I mean, we started analyzing this in probably late 2017, early got in earnest in 2018, doing the designing, the network analysis, trying to find a property, doing the financial justification.
Yeah.
And then we got it approved. We didn't break ground until May of last year. And with all the earth that was moved, all the concrete poured, all the electrical work done, all the racking and the dock, it's amazing what they did in 13 months when all the paperwork took about 18, you know?
Right.
So that's what goes into it. I mean, you have to plan, you know, where can you run this? You know, this is where are your destinations? You know, where are you delivering to? And what will your delivery network be, and how far afield from where you currently are? Where's the optimal place to do that? Then find properties, which actually was a big challenge. You know, if you fly over this area, there's a lot of green space, but not a lot of it is developable for this purpose.
Yeah.
And for good reason. And I think last time we talked, we mentioned that that's why Canby was attractive, because you already had set aside that, I forgot what it's called exactly, industrial zone or dedicated area that was ready for development for this purpose.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of two viable locations. So that helped. Then you do the analysis based off of the data you have. You design it not only off of what you're doing now, but what you expect to be doing in the future, which, as you can imagine, after our discussion just earlier, you know, predicting the future is difficult. as soon as you do, you're wrong.
Right.
You know, we had to do that and then size the building accordingly and then make cost benefit analysis, you know, based off of, hey, what's the likelihood of this to happen versus the cost to accommodate it? Mm-hmm. And then come up with that plan, get board approval, you know, find a developer, find designer, find architects, and then, you know, get going on it. So it's just amazing how many people with the variety of skill sets required to make this successful. We ended up working with Trammell Crow, the developer who partnered with our owners to form a development company. Perlo Construction just did a fabulous job. I'm just going to give them a call out by name there. Hmm. LRS Architects helped us with the office. BMLK Engineering and Architects with the land property and the warehouse structure. Yeah. And a lot of other subcontractors, you know, local people, that tradespeople that come out and do things from drywalling to electrical work to data wiring to back installation. Just an amazing, talented bunch of people come together to do their part.
And did a lot of them have experience with projects of this size? Did you get any, you know, here's what we want to do, and they say, now what now?
No. Actually, you know, Perlo specializes in this. Trammell Crow does. They actually, Perlo's just got a good roadmap for this. Great partners and know what they're doing. I think the ones who said, "Why? What do you want to do?" That was us.
Okay.
You know, we don't build 530,000 square foot warehouses too often. Usually, you know, usually in this business, you lease something that exists. So
yeah,
I've been in warehousing for a while, but this is the first time I've actually gone from a ground up on a warehouse. Usually, just go in and lease one.
Yeah, yeah. And what about that big cooler that you have in there? Is that built?
Yeah, that's built into the building. It's what we call it, a box in a box. We basically build a cooler within it. One thing you have to do is just make sure the concrete depth below is actually a little bit thicker for the footprint, because it can freeze because the cold air settles and can buckle the floor.
Yeah,
that's up. You know, that's up. Got the insulation walls. Got the cooler units and up and working.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact square footage, maybe you do, of that cooler, but I do remember I did the math and it would hold something like 16 of my houses.
Yeah, it's the footprint's almost 53,000 square feet.
Good grief.
now.
Joining us once again on the Canby Now podcast is Derek Hill of Advantage Mortgage. He joins us on the line, of course. How are things in the industry right now with all the crazy stuff going on?
It's a little crazy, but not too crazy. I mean, we definitely have seen some things tighten up. Obviously, with any kind of uncertainty, banks tend to tighten their guidelines. So the great thing about being a broker is that even though some of our lenders are tightening up, we have others that aren't. We have a lot of lenders that are just status quo. They're like, hey, we still have all the same channels. We still have all the same credit score requirements. Interest rates may be a little bit higher because of the level of risk, but they're still funding loans. So actually March was one of the biggest months of our company's funding. So
wow.
we're still funding loans. There's still people out there buying. There's still people out there selling. We have to make sure that we're not, spreading the virus and whatnot, but yeah, everything's still moving along.
Cool. So how can people get in touch with you right now?
The easiest way is just call the office, 503-266-5800, or send us an email, derek@findtheadvantage.com. But just call the office and we'd be happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek. Hang in there.
All right. You as well. Derek Hill, NMLS 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
In terms of the operation, so Lindsay, you mentioned obviously this is a completely new building. We've talked about that, but in terms of the operations, it's going to be relocating a lot of what's happening out of three Portland area warehouses right now, and just kind of shifting those operations down to Canby. Another headache for you, I guess, Andy. In terms of what does that look like?
So integrating the operations, that's actually the heavy lifting for us.
Yeah.
What I call operationalize the building. So we have to take our current processes and make sure they work in that building with the way it's configured. The other thing, is we're introducing a new technology there. So currently we pick off a paper, which is extremely antiquated. So we basically print out paper pick sheets, fairly antiquated, and so we're moving to a device, handheld device technology, barcode scanning to verify the quality, and then we have to train up people, and quite honestly, that's one of our big risk points, is to make sure that we have sufficient staffing that's adequately trained for when we go live, to make sure that that we can do well with that. I'm being fairly frank with you, that's probably our biggest concern, is to make sure that we have good processes that people are trained up on.
Sure.
The benefit is we've got good leadership. We know that a lot of our leadership's going down with the building. We do expect some frontline employee turnover, and that's where we're hoping to partner with local, employment support agencies in the county and the city to help us with that, and identify people that we can bring on in a cadence that we can get them trained up and comfortable and ready to do that. But quite honestly, that's the heavy lifting for Columbia Distributing.
Yeah. Can you define that word you use, picking? Is it just like when my wife sends me to the grocery store with a list, or what?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, you get a list and you go pick it off the shelf. But that's what
goes on the truck.
Yeah, we get orders every day. We get orders, we have to, kind of route those orders and plan them, and then we release them to the warehouse, and then warehouse employees during the night shift actually have to pick the product to the order. Some of them, might be 20 pallet orders, and so the one person or a team is picking those 20 pallets throughout the night.
Sure.
And then for smaller accounts, we might be picking five cases and on the, one pallet for four accounts each. So, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
it's actually pretty complicated to do it efficiently and to make sure it gets loaded on the right truck in the right order.
Yeah, I bet. So, yeah. I my wife criticizes my efficiency at the grocery store, so I can imagine.
Yeah, and you probably do some mispicks where you come home with things you weren't supposed to.
Oh, every time. Yeah. Lindsay, Andy obviously mentioned, you know, in terms of this project and where it was going to go, some of the limitations was just like there's only so many places that a 530,000 square foot warehouse can be built in the area in which you were looking to build, and with the needed infrastructure as far as, you know, access to the highways and other things that you need to for the routes of your employees and their trucks. But I believe that, and we talked about this in the last interview as well, there were certain things about the Canby community that you felt resonated with the company and would be a good fit. Can you revisit some of those thoughts and maybe even what you've seen now that you're you know, pretty close to officially moving in there and being part of the community in a more, I guess, in-person way?
Yeah, I personally speaking, I have fallen in love with the Canby community. I mean, I want to move there. We chose Canby, of course, as you mentioned, the land space. It's also a very business friendly community, right? Mm-hmm. So I've taken part in many of chamber meetings, a couple of the Rotary meetings, been to some of the new business openings. Mm-hmm. It's just a very business friendly community. Mm-hmm. We see that we can provide jobs for the community, and we will, and we are actually, quite a few people who live there have already started with us mm-hmm. to train up in Portland, get their, you know, feet on the ground and start running so that when we get there, they're full on board and know the job. And you know, also we just really want to kind of branch out and get out of the city of Portland and, you know, make some headway in a new city that's, you know, very receptive to what we have to offer in the way of a community partnership and, like I said, on jobs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you guys coming in, obviously, it's going to be, you know, one of the largest, certainly the largest building, as we mentioned, the largest rate payer. We've reported on that for in terms of property taxes. I'm not sure exactly employees, because I'm not sure exactly how many will be ultimately be based out of that building. Maybe you guys know, but compared to Portland, where you're one of the larger companies, you're a big fish here in Canby. How does it look as far as how that relationship might go, or how you maybe approach that from being a little bit of a leader in this small community, I guess?
Yeah, and we've had to be fairly sensitive to that, because although we are big, and throughout Portland, I'd say we probably have 700 to 800 employees, and about 300 will be in Canby, 500 or so will report to a new corporate office in Wilsonville.
Okay.
Adjacent. We are big in size. We look giant, but we are actually very small and very familial. Like a small family owned type of company. I mean, we're not really a corporate company, if you know, in the air quotes I'm using here.
Right. that everyone on this podcast can see.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to take a step back, distributors in themselves are very kind of, they are a family business. Most distributors throughout the country started by a family and continue to be passed down through generation and generation. And so the thread of family throughout the industry and throughout the company is always felt. It's not often that you will see somebody who works or talk to somebody who works within within a distributor say that it is either too corporate or it is corporate. It's, you know, big business. We're not. That's, you know, like I say, the size is intimidating, yet the frame of mind and the love and kind of love we have for each other and kind of mom and pop feel once you're kind of inside and know the company, it's a really cool feeling.
Yeah.
Kind of the structure of, you know, we go into delis and restaurants, clubs, and the sales reps and the delivery guys know those people personally. And typically they're on that route for the duration they're here, they call on those accounts. So many times they become friends, they know their business well. And that's a, it's just the nature of the business that helps kind of ingratiate you with local community.
Yeah, that's really cool. I remember the first time we had you guys on the podcast, and you took me on a tour in the facility, and it seemed like you just, of those 700 or 800 people, we didn't see all of them, but it seemed like you knew everyone by name, and you know, we're talking about their families and stuff. It was really cool to see.
Yeah.
So let's do Andy's favorite thing and look toward the future. Can you tell us the current status of the building here in Canby? From the outside, it looks pretty much done. I mean, it looks beautiful. The signs are up. The landscaping's up. You don't know kind of what the status or what more might be needed inside. But can you tell us that and maybe what the time frame looks like as far as that move in?
Yeah, so we officially took possession, and you know, our lease commenced on Monday, June 1st. So we actually are in possession of the building now. We're still doing some buttoning up things.
Okay.
And once we get settled, you know, once you get into a building, you notice some additional things you need to do.
Yeah, sure.
So we're working on that list, you know, kind of punch listing things that should be done and wrapped up. And so we're in there already doing that. Our IT system's working. We'll probably receive our first load as early as next week.
Oh, wow.
We have our temporary certificate of occupancy. We have our federal permit. We have the city permit. We're still waiting on the state permit plus state agricultural inspection. Mm-hmm. So we expect to be able, you know, to be legally able to receive alcoholic beverages in there early next week. So we might receive something in next week, more likely the following week. We actually have, I think we're scheduled to have 80,000 units in there by the end of the month, which is almost twice as much as we originally planned. So we're right now we're just receiving directly from suppliers. We're not transferring any product yet from our current facility. And we'll probably start doing that on top of the supplier receipts in late July, and then really go heavy at it in August. And then we plan on testing some picking and running some routes out of there in mid September, about September 21st, and then run our first full night operations will begin on Sunday, October 4th.
Oh, wow.
And then following that, we'll take the month of October to empty out all the rest of the product that was left in our Portland facilities and move that down there.
Wow, cool. Well, I didn't realize you'd already kind of moved in. I should have brought over a basket of muffins for a housewarming gift, maybe later this week. Well, we are almost out of time here. Appreciate so much having you guys back on the show. We still have the free version of Zoom here, so you guys can probably see they're about to kick us off. But is there anything you'd like to say before we get kicked out of Zoom here?
No, I just like to echo Lindsay was saying. It really is a nice community. I mean, it's, you know, really kind of a neat, homey place. So we're really excited to be there and looking forward to getting to know everyone better. We'll probably do some kind of open house or where we'll have some, you know, local dignitaries, maybe some of our local neighbors join us and get a little tour of the facility and that kind of thing. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, again, with the future, we don't know what events will be, but I feel like we could do social distancing pretty well with 530,000 square feet.
Yeah. Very
true. What about you, Lindsay? Any last words?
Yeah, I actually kicked off what I wanted to say. I have been talking to so many people in the community saying, you know, basically like, wait till the house is done. We'll invite you over for the housewarming. And yeah. I still am still saying that we're going to do it. It might look a little different and we might have to wear our masks and stay 6 feet apart. But I definitely want to stand next to that promise that we will have the community in and show everyone just how proud we are of the building and proud we are to have it in Canby. And I appreciate the platform you have here, Tyler, for us to continue to communicate with Canby, our excitement and our eagerness to get in there and start getting to know everybody.
Well, absolutely. And I think that it just reflects a little bit more about what you were talking about earlier, but that kind of non-corporate company feel that you have that, you know, sure, random independent podcast. We'll definitely do an interview with you guys. I think that that's really cool and I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Odd Most Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.